Should an entrepreneur blog or do a business plan? Welcome to Venture Voice, show number one, where we'll hear the answer to that question and many others. I'm Greg Gallant, and this is part one of two of my discussion with Dick Costolo, the co-founder and CEO of FeedBurner. FeedBurner provides value-added services for RSS, which stands for Really Simple Syndication, an interface that allows users access to data from blogs, traditional media, podcasts, and other sources in the way they want to view it. For example, you can use RSS to view the New York Times and your nephew's blog side by side in My Yahoo. You can also use RSS to have this podcast automatically loaded to your iPod as we produce new shows. Dick's company allows publishers of RSS, including yours truly, to view stats on their RSS, manage subscribers, and potentially make money, something Venture Voice would like to do in the near future. In this show, we discuss some of the technical issues of RSS, but focus on how Dick successfully raised two rounds of venture capital, operates in Chicago, a city not known for having many tech startups, and stays focused despite being a serial entrepreneur. Enjoy. Hi, Dick. Welcome to Venture Voice.
Great to be here.
This isn't your first company, I read.
That's correct. This is actually a fourth company, getting progressively bigger as we've gone along here. Hopefully this one will be the biggest yet.
Could you give me a quick rundown of how you got started starting these companies and some of the other ones that you've been involved with?
Sure. There were four of us who have started all of them together, and we were working together back in the mid-90s when the internet sort of happened and left immediately to do a web, you know, one of those early web design shops, right? Build websites for companies and so forth. Sold that, started another consulting company and sold that, then started a, decided we wanted to do a product stuff, you know, tired of doing consulting. So we started a email and wireless alerts company called SpyOnIt. SpyOnIt was 1999 and 2000, turned around and sold that to a wireless financial service company, worked there for a couple of years. And when we got back together, this time we said, let's try to do a, you know, really fun consumer products company, something that we can just get in use by as many people as possible. And RSS was sort of, you know, had already been taking off at the time and decided we wanted to dive into that.
What gave you the idea for this service that people would want statistics about RSS?
Kind of funny, actually. It's one of those things that the thing that got us interested in it ended up not necessarily being the thing that's, that everybody really likes about it. The thing that got us interested in it was because we were doing all these wireless alert services, we noticed RSS taking off because we thought, hey, this is going to be a great way to process wireless and instant messaging alerts because you've got content now that's in a structured format like RSS instead of having to do screen scraping of HTML where you would have to go to a content source and try to guess where the structure on the page was. In RSS, you know where the structure is because RSS is all about telling you this thing is the title, this thing is the description, this thing is the link. So we got into it because we were excited about the possibilities for mobile applications and wireless alerts. But of course, as we dug into it more and more, we realized, wow, there's just a bunch of opportunity here to provide a whole set of publisher services for making syndication more understandable, easier, tracking metrics, etc.
Yeah, when I talk to people in technology, everyone's in love with RSS. But when I talk to a lot of people who aren't, or even people who are in media, where you'd kind of think they should know about RSS, a lot of them don't. How would you describe it briefly?
I think that you're absolutely right. So the interesting thing that's happening is that I think when the web took off, that it really caught. Subscribers picked up to it, you know, users, consumers of content picked up on it pretty quickly and started adopting it, and it caught a lot of publishers and content providers and marketers by surprise. This time, as the initial wave of RSS is sort of taking off here, and it's definitely taking off, I mean, subscriber growth, despite the fact that a lot of people still don't know what the heck it is, subscriber growth for the early adopters is really going crazy. And this time, I think what's happened is that content providers and publishers are saying, hey, you know, we're not going to not going to get caught flat-footed again, and they're jumping right into the deep end of the pool right away. And at least the subscriber growth from the early adopters is supporting that decision because they're seeing these great increases in numbers. But it's definitely the case that all the analysts that we talk to and the statistics that we see and the numbers that we see indicate that there needs to be some additional mechanisms that just make it a lot easier to subscribe to RSS feeds and consume RSS feeds and use them in ways that don't require jumping through a bunch of hoops in order to get the feed if this stuff is going to become truly mass market. So I think that those are things that we'll see happening in the next couple months. People are already talking about one-click subscribe to podcasts, how that's going to work. There's some support building for a specific way of doing one-click subscribe to podcasts. And I think you'll just see more and more of that that will help the transition from early adopters to mass market use.
I've been seeing your name around in the news a lot more in terms of getting data on what these feeds are and what's happening with blogs and podcasts.
Yep.
What kind of data do you see you guys providing, and especially compared to like a Technorati or some of these other services?
Good question. We are really when people ask me what is FeedBurner, I really just describe it as, hey, all we really do and all we're interested in doing is managing RSS feeds for publishers and providing RSS management services for publishers. We're not really interested in being a research company. Right. However, as a result or as a function, I guess, of providing all these services to publishers, we end up having a view on some metrics in the aggregate sense, like number of feeds doing X, number of feeds doing Y, that nobody else has, or at least that nobody else is measuring. So I'm providing some of those statistics to reporters and analysts and the media as a free service to the community, and it's not really anything we're planning on building the business around. Our business is all about just helping publishers manage their feeds and do interesting things with their feeds. We're not going to be in the business of doing research reports or anything like that.
A lot of these trends are changing very fast with more capabilities of RSS and more people using them. What area are you spending most of your time researching right now?
That's a great question. So I'll tell you what I think we're going to see happen. I think we're going to start to see, I'm privy to some of this information because of the statistics we see, so I'm cheating a little bit, but I think you're going to see a lot more specialized RSS clients. So what I mean by that is you're going to start to see more clients that are just built for mobile devices, right? This is a RSS photo viewer for mobile phones, right? And all it will do is scroll through RSS feeds of images that are sized to a specific thumbnail size for a specific mobile phone. Or this is an RSS screensaver for a desktop, and all it does is pull video feeds, RSS enclosures of video feeds and play them as a screensaver. I think you're going to see more and more of these specialized clients as there are more and more types of content that get distributed via RSS. And I think that will really help subscriber take up of RSS, because obviously people who don't care to go read 400 blog feeds might still like to have this cool screensaver of their these four video feeds that they're interested in. So that's the kind of stuff that we see happening a lot more. I just think there will be all sorts of different flavors of that.
You guys have been really keeping on top of this, and you recently got a new round of funding.
We did.
And some bloggers as funders.
Yes, that's correct. Brad Feld of Mobius, who is certainly a blogger, led our second round of investment. So the comment that I would make there from both our perspective and Brad's perspective is that, I would have never met Brad, and I wouldn't have known who he was if it weren't for his blog. I think, moreover, as FeedBurner got to be really popular and there was a lot of interest in investment in our company, it was interesting to have been reading Brad's blog and have known for a while, okay, this is the kind of guy this person is, this is the kind of stuff he invests in, and that's very helpful when you you walk into the room to pitch that kind of person, to have some perspective on here are companies he's invested in, here's what he thought of those companies, and so forth.
So do you think for entrepreneurs out there, they should focus on doing a blog rather than a business plan?
That's a great question. And if you ask me to just answer that specific question, like you can only do one of those two things, a blog or a business plan, I would absolutely say that a blog is better than a business plan. Now, a bunch of people will react to that and say, that's ridiculous. Of course, there's no replacement for a sound business plan, and so on and so forth. However, I'm saying, if you ask me to choose one or the other, I think in this Web 2.0 world of being able to get companies off the ground quickly, being able to build things, release them, and then iterate and build, and iterate and iterate and iterate and keep rolling out things more frequently, that it behooves entrepreneurs to use a blog or some other quick start method of communication as a vehicle for getting awareness and understanding of what they're trying to do, instead of building a detailed business plan, trying to get funding around an idea by cold calling people, and then getting started based on that funding. I think that having a blog, thinking about what you're doing and writing about what you're doing in the blog is a much faster way to build an audience and generate interest.
This round that you just completed, that was your second round, correct?
Correct.
So how did you go about raising your first round?
Well, when we started raising our first round, just telling a couple people, most people didn't, a lot of people that we were talking to at least didn't know how to spell RSS. It's sort of it's somebody else's joke, but I'll use it. So it was a lot harder to raise our A round. We were in Chicago, and when we had done our previous company, SpyOn, it was called, we had talked to several potential investors about investing in the company, and then what ended up happening was we sold it, but we had at least created some relationships. So when we did go to raise money for this company, it was one of the folks who had previously considered investment in SpyOn it that knew we'd all done this before, that we'd been together for 10 years, and so there was a lot of trust and faith in, I may not particularly understand or believe, maybe believe is a better word, I may not particularly believe Dick's, growth numbers here, and it's very early days for this stuff, but these guys have done it before, and they've worked together for a long time, so, I'm willing to bet on that. So I think it was more the team and the history that got us through the A round, and then that helped us build out the product to a point where it became popular enough that the second round was done largely on the quality of the technology we'd released.
Tell me a little more about your other founders and kind of how the four of you have interacted and how you met in the first place.
Yep, we were all actually on a advanced technology project at Anderson Consulting back in the early 90s, and I think all of us, at least three of the four of us, were computer science majors, and the fourth person was, user interaction, a human factors degree, and was working on the UI elements of this advanced technology we were building at Anderson. And like I say, when the internet sort of happened there, when the web took off. Obviously, the internet had been around for a long time, but when the web really took off there in the early 90s, we all decided this is going to be big. This is a much more interesting way to leverage technology. Anderson wasn't really thinking about it that way, so we took off and started our own thing. So since then, obviously, a couple of us have morphed into different roles. This is the first startup I haven't programmed in, much to the delight of the rest of the founders. So I'm not doing any coding anymore.
So do you miss the coding?
that was what I studied at school. So there are always times where I feel like I should just this certain thing's not getting done that I would really like to see in FeedBurner, and I should just hop in and do it, and I'd love to do it, but I don't have any of the tools on my machine now. It's amazing how quickly you can become unable to contribute when you're not keeping up to speed with things.
So what do you enjoy the most now, not being CEO if you can't program?
You know, to be perfectly honest, the thing that I'm enjoying the most now is actually running, trying to build the business. We have had the good fortune in the past to be able to sell companies that we were building very quickly, you know, relatively quickly, I should say. And this time, we're definitely embarking here on, let's build this as a real business. Let's make it a sustainable, you know, high-growth business. And I'm really enjoying all those aspects of it because I really haven't, you know, we haven't been in things for the really long haul before. And so that's something I'm just having a lot of fun doing as we try to start to think about FeedBurner, you know, 2, 3, and 4 years down the road. What do we want it to look like? What sort of implications does that have for what we need to be doing now? Those are fun things for me to work on.
So what does your office look like now? What's the headcount?
Yeah, it is the quintessential startup office right now. One big room with one tiny conference room off to the side. No cubes, just flat desks. So everybody's in the room. All 11 of us can see all other 11 of us. And one main phone line, one fax line. It's classic startup office. For people starting companies, you know, I like to stay in the first startup office for as long as possible. And so we've been here now for over a year because you're never more productive than when you're in that first small, you know, let's just get stuff done and get stuff out office. Now, it gets to the point where it becomes unmanageable, and we're pretty much there, like I said, with one phone line, as much as we've got going on now. And people, you can't have two meetings or you can't have two conference calls at the same time now. So that obviously it's obviously time to get out of here. But I always like to stay in the first office as long as possible because that's the place that you're most efficient.
And now when I called, you'd answer the phone. Is that something you make a regular practice of?
There are a few phones around the office, and it's sort of, you know, hey, when the phone rings, whoever can get to it. So, yes, you know, there have been a couple of, definitely a few times where I've answered the phone, and I think the person on the other line might have expected it to be a much larger organization than one in which the CEO that they were looking for is answering the phone. But, that's the fun part of the company when everyone's doing everything and you haven't had to slot yourself into I only do this kind of thing and I'm off over here in the corner not understanding what's going on in the architecture team and so forth. So this is my favorite part of the company, and now I'm kind of getting geared up and really excited now about let's try to really build this thing out and see what it looks like in 2 or 3, 4 years.
As you grow, what do you find is the hardest thing to delegate? Aside from answering the phone.
What I find the hardest thing for me to delegate as we grow is the process of delegating. I mean, there's no question about the fact that, you know, I'm definitely one of those people that, and I think this goes for my co-founders as well, is we're all super obsessive about things and about wanting to do things the right way and about making sure things are done. And when you're that way, it's hard to just let go of a certain part of the business and say, well, I just have to assume that this is being dealt with and I'll rely on either a status report or a pipeline report or a weekly update to make sure it's getting done the way it should be done. That kind of letting go of that kind of stuff is extremely hard for me. So I'm, you know, and the funny thing is as you build these companies and start over, you know, when we sold SpyOnIt, at the acquiring company, we still grew SpyOnIt to be a 50-person team. And so as a 50-person team, you know, you start delegating things. And then when you're delegating things, you don't necessarily like the way they get done anymore. And you start to say, you know, when we start this next company, when we go and do this next thing that turned out to be FeedBurner, I'm going to make sure that I'm responsible for X, Y, Z. Well, of course, you know, you get to the point within FeedBurner where you don't have time to be responsible for X, Y, Z anymore. You can only do so many things in a day. And you find yourself delegating things again. So, but you have to sort of relearn that process every time of delegation and making sure that you've got just enough information to be comfortable and not micromanaging everybody.
So what are your thoughts on that old kind of debate that everyone has, especially venture capitalists, on whether or not founding entrepreneurs make good CEOs?
Yeah, so that's a great question. That certainly is the old debate. I think that there's absolutely no correlation between whether or not good or bad, as to whether or not the founding entrepreneur can be a good CEO or not. I think there are lots of cases in which the founding entrepreneur can be a great CEO, and then there are cases, there are certainly cases in which the founding entrepreneur is not going to be a great CEO. It's probably the instance in which the founding entrepreneur is really passionate about some particular aspect of an idea and not necessarily willing to do the things necessary to build the holistic business around that idea, in which the founding entrepreneurs get into trouble. So, you know, when the founding entrepreneur is thinking, well, I really started this business because of this particular aspect, and now that the industry has zigged when I thought it would zag, I'm not able to adapt to that because I only really cared about this particular aspect. When entrepreneurs are more interested in the general idea or the new kind of technology or the new kinds of things that what they're working on will enable, then they can make much better CEOs because, having been thinking about it for a long time, when the market zigs, when everybody else thought it was going to zag, that's more interesting to the entrepreneur. Hey, this is look at what's happened. This interesting thing has happened. Fortunately, we've been thinking about this stuff a lot, and we sort of were able to think that, you know, when this kind of other thing happened that nobody thought would happen, we'll be able to adapt to it. So I think it's entirely dependent on the way the entrepreneur comes into the business, whether it's more from a standpoint of, I want to do this one thing and I want to do it specifically this way, or it's from the standpoint of, here's a very interesting new capability that will have an interesting impact on one or more markets, and let's try to take advantage of that.
Now that you've launched a few businesses, I guess you're qualified as a serial entrepreneur. Yes, is there any point at which you think, let's say, FeedBurner keeps growing, is there a certain size when you say, okay, I've kind of done my part here as the entrepreneur, I want to start another business, or kind of grow it?
To be perfectly honest with you, I'm definitely interested now in growing this for a while because it's something that we haven't done before. So I think the serial entrepreneur question is good for a couple reasons. I think that it's a good question because we aren't thinking, let's just do this thing and then when someone comes along and wants to buy it very first thing, we'll sell it because we've done that before. And we understand that, you know, while it's fun to sell a company in its infancy, there's certainly a lot of downsides to that. You don't get to see your thing grow up to look kind of the way you thought it might. If the industry really takes off, you might end up thinking, you know, I should have stuck with that. It could have been a much bigger deal for me. So part of being a serial entrepreneur is actually helping us want to make this a much bigger, longer-term thing this time because we haven't done that before. But on the other hand, I'll say that I certainly think that, you know, if I'm honest with myself, 5 or 6 years down the road, when other things start happening in the industry again, I'm sure I'll start thinking, boy, it would be really fun to go out and, you know, do something in this new space now. For now, though, we're sort of all focused and happy to try to make FeedBurner a big deal.
And have you seen opportunities out there, whether it be in RSS or in other areas of technology, where you kind of almost want to start a business or go in that direction with FeedBurner but have to restrain yourself or couldn't do it?
That's a good question. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't think I've ever been more obsessive or focused on the thing that I was doing at the time than right now. So by that I mean, when we were doing Spy on It, I still felt like I was able to see everything else that was going on in technology and the internet and business in general. And right now, there's just so much going on around what we're doing with FeedBurner that I really haven't even had time to even think to myself, boy, this other thing over here is really interesting and what would be a fun thing to do there. It just, there's just, you know, your brain has a certain amount of capacity of things you can be thinking about in it, and when I'm on a train or in the back of a car or something and my mind wanders, it usually wanders now to, you know, we should really try to do this thing in our FeedBurner service so that we can make it more usable instead of to other interesting possibilities.
You're kind of right in the center of where things are going with technology, but geographically you're not quite in the center of where all these people are working.
There's no two ways about it. It's very hard to do a venture-funded startup outside of San Francisco, New York, Boston, or LA. Maybe you could say, you know, look, there's a good community in Austin. I think that's probably true. There's probably a pretty decent community in Austin, but outside of that, it starts to get to be really quite hard. And we talked to several VCs when we were doing our A round that said, you know, really like the idea. You know, I get RSS. We get that this is a big opportunity. Hate that you're in Chicago, right? which is a hard thing, because all four of us have families. All four of us have families with roots here. So, you know, we've always said, well, we're doing it in Chicago, and we've done all our other companies in Chicago. But there's no question that it makes it harder. And so we just try to stay as plugged in as possible to what's going on out east and out west, and you know, we have lots of relationships there, but you know, certainly we'll miss stuff, right? People will say, hey, are you going to this particular conference? And we'll say, you know, no, we didn't think that was going to be a very big deal. And you know, people say, oh yeah, well, you know, everyone out here is talking about it. So there's certainly a bit of disadvantage, all other things being equal, and you just have to try to ameliorate that with, you know, relationships and keeping in touch with people out there who can help you understand what's going on.
In addition to kind of venture capital and just knowing about the buzz, is it trouble to get good talent?
No. So the plus side, that I'm glad you asked that follow up, because I thought to mention this in my first answer, but it's absolutely relevant. The plus side, the upside to being here in Chicago is it's not like you have to compete against the 50 other really, you know, fun, interesting startups in town, right? There are only a couple. You know, there's us and then the 37 Signals guys, the guys who do Basecamp and Backpack are here, and a couple others, but that's really, you know, that's really it. It's actually quite good when we're recruiting, because we get these, you know, an overwhelming number of really great candidates. And the hard part is sort of making sure, when you get a pool of really great candidates, you really want to make sure you don't, you know, screw something up. So we've been really rigorous about our interviewing process and so forth. But no, the definitely the advantage to being here is that it's a lot easier to attract the great talent, because you're not competing with, you know, these 50 other hot new companies.
That's all for our first show. But we'll soon post the second part of our conversation with Dick. We'll discuss such topics as team building, how to pitch a venture capitalist through his iPod on your business idea, and the biggest threat to FeedBurner. Please send your feedback to talk@venturevoice.com. That's talk@venturevoice.com. Let us know who you'd like to hear from and what you want out of this show.